data is proliferating and you need a high velocity, high scale way to harness that data and treat that data with gradient of maturation and preparedness for use.
Welcome to Unlocking Big Data, a series about getting trusted data to healthcare decision makers presented by Hims. In December 2023, Hims Market Insights conducted research with 100 healthcare leaders to understand perspectives on the use of data analytics platforms. Throughout the series, we'll present key data points from the research and focus on why these data points are important and how you can leverage these findings to support your healthcare organization's data initiatives. Today, I'm joined by Albert Duntugan, Chief Data Officer at UCLA, and Nick Stipro, Chief Product and Technology Officer for Arcadia. According to the research, healthcare leaders universally feel that data platforms are critical for their organization's ability to adopt tech and tools across the enterprise, about 98% said that, and to create a trustworthy data asset for their stakeholders, around 95% said that. But a little more than half said that they lack the data infrastructure necessary to fully realize the value of AI today. And they cited data quality issues, the challenge with consolidating disparate data, and implementing comprehensive enterprise data solutions. These were challenges, and they also wanted these platforms to meet these important goals. Also, around 3 in 5 said that enabling a comprehensive enterprise data strategy was really important, was a must-have. So my first question is actually to Albert, and it was very interesting when the respondents were asked about, you know, what were these goals and what was important to you. You kind of heard some of the data, but they ranked a few things low on the list. And I want to tell you what those are and get your reactions to that. So they were asked about three things that they kind of ranked low. One was enabling bidirectional flow of data across systems and platforms. The second was ability to digest non-traditional healthcare data. And the third was tools that would help them get the most out of their data on day one. So do you think these elements need to actually be bumped up in terms of level of priority?
Yeah, as a chief data officer, I definitely would bump those three items up. So speaking to the first, which was the ability to
have bidirectional flow of data.
Yeah. So within our data platform, we're ingesting different data sets. We're doing lots of things to them to account for what's happening in reality. But often that insight that's generated out of that can't just sit in our platform. It has to go to another application, another place where people in the business are actually using it. For a doctor who's in a particular unit, for a revenue cycle specialist who's in a billing shop, they need it right then and there. So we need to send that data out. And at the same time, based on whatever they're doing, sometimes we need that data back. So there's this constant intra-flow of data across systems, not only within our organization, but with partner organizations that we work with. Second, when it comes to incorporating non-traditional data sets, definitely in this age of AI, we can't just rely on EHR data, on claims data. We need to be able to take advantage of, say, the things that we can accomplish in precision health. We need genomic data of our patients to predict what conditions they may have. For our patients that live in different areas, in my case of Los Angeles, we may want to know, is a patient within a particular region where there's a cancer cluster or an area where the air quality may not be as good? That can definitely have an effect on their health that a physician would want to act on. So in the case of having tools or accelerators to take advantage of what's in your platform right away, that's definitely important. As technologists, we may like writing code and piecing together solutions, but the business may not be able to wait for us. Well, we may be able to then create on-the-fly experiments and see immediately what the effect of that is, say, in marketing and getting outreach to our patients and trying to draw them into different campaigns to manage disease conditions. Time is of the essence. So definitely all those three attributes, I'd bump up the list.
Yeah, it almost like flips the order of importance even. And that kind of goes to Nick, you know, what you've talked about, which is the idea that data and analytic strategies today can either be barriers or enablers of this new world of Gen AI. So can you talk a little bit about your experience over the last 12 months and how that's maybe been changing for enterprise strategies?
Well, I think the last 12 months is a useful window to pick because I think very few of us ahead of that period were prepared for the rapid evolution of generative AI. I think it took the world by storm, and I think rightly so. I think obviously there's a fair amount of hype in that cycle, but I think the power of these new models is immense. And I think a lot of people were really caught flat-footed. I liken it to the Italians inventing a Ferrari before they invented roads, right? And so you've got this beautiful, shiny thing that looks really, really powerful, but you don't know what the heck to do with it or how to deploy it. And I think that's a productive analogy because the building of roads is not necessarily the flashiest thing. It is foundational infrastructure that a lot of people were not investing in the way that Albert has. And as a result, when the these really, really powerful new capabilities evolve and come along, you can't really activate them. So it gets down to what Albert was saying around having highly liquid bidirectional exchange of data. It's getting the quality right. It's understanding high scale, low latency data storage and compute. And that sounds really boring, but without that, you're going to be left in the dust as others are able to harness these latest gen technologies.
I like the idea of the Ferrari. The nice thing about the Ferrari coming before the roads were all built out is that it gets people excited. It gives them a reason to go ahead and build that road. And I see that relationship between data and AI.
I love that. I have not extended the analogy, but that makes perfect sense. Yeah, now there's a reason to build a road.
Well, going with that analogy, so is it an impetus to improve the existing enterprise data quality, or are we going to be looking at new sources of data to fuel this new car?
Yeah, it's a little of both. New data sources are going to be those big data sets, those genomics and waveforms, and streaming data from different companies that you wouldn't typically think of that a healthcare organization would interact with. But certainly the traditional EHR and claims data has a wealth of knowledge as well. And the data quality techniques to improve those data sets will vary. The types of people that will need to validate the data will vary. So if anything, it compels us to create better roads, different kinds of roads. And I think that's part of the fun. This just isn't a data science exercise to build the latest and greatest model to improve an LLM. It also brings along the workforce that has been with us this whole time to participate in building out this new future.
I think that's dead on. There's also a category of data that we didn't necessarily consider data, or at least we didn't consider analytics grade data that now can be activated. So you mentioned, you know, some of the more modern data around genomics and in some research info, but no one really considered transcripts or voice recordings necessarily data or an analytics grade data set. Now all of a sudden we can eat them for lunch, right? And so your breadth of data is expanding even back in time to data sources that you previously sort of shoved away in a closet and now are actually really, really lucrative lucrative things to mine.
Yeah, now that we're in the age of ambient AI, everyone's so excited. It calls in some privacy questions that we're going to have to work through, but the opportunity to be able to pick up nuggets of information that can be acted on clinically and socially is just immense.
Completely.
Yeah, it's a great time.
So going back to the cost of the Ferrari, Nick, how are you thinking about sort of total cost of ownership and other metrics? How is it changing the cost equation for your customers?
I think even before AI, it's probably the number one thing people got wrong is as they're building out data strategies, not fully understanding the cost of ownership. And that increases really rapidly with all the stuff that we were just talking about, these new types of data, really, really massive compute to run these language models. The cloud made a lot of things really, really easy. I think one of the things that made the easiest was spending a boatload of money because you can blink and wake up to a seven-digit bill, you know, like that. But it's not just cloud costs, you know, where you have to really pay attention to optimizing, you know, compute and storage and thinking about what information is at what grade. But also the personnel required to sustain these operations. It's really, really easy to I shouldn't say really easy. It's relatively easy to build really interesting and powerful data platforms. I think it's relatively harder to sustain that over time with the governance that Albert was talking about, but also just the personnel and feeding that it requires. The staff that are that can service these types of things are incredibly expensive. They're being poached by big tech, you know, everywhere. So you have to sustain that cost, and then you have to understand, consistent training, and it's just there's an awful lot there. And so I think the guidance that I provide to folks like Albert is to understand where you want to invest, where you can do something differentiated versus what you can treat as a commodity, and realize, hey, we don't need to own this total cost. We can sort of outsource that to, you know, a third-party partner or vendor.
I'd love your thoughts on that, Albert, from the perspective of the institution. You already made a tremendous investment. We as an industry made a tremendous investment in the EHR over the last number of decades, and you've been there for that. And now it's a whole other sea change of investment dollars. And so how are you thinking about that with your executive team? How are you setting those goals and those expectations over time?
Yeah, what Nick said really hit it on the head. The costs extend beyond the platform to the people, to sustaining those processes. There's a time cost, there's an education cost. And like you mentioned, Indu, when we did the transition to EHRs, there was an emergency to power that. We had the Great Recession, we had the EHR incentive program and meaningful use. We don't necessarily have that now to drive that. So we have to look at our existing investments and see how can we redirect funding and resources to the new world of AI. And so this is where optimization and efficiency come in. The math equation is very blunt and real. You can't grow the money off of trees. So what do we shut down in our legacy world? And how can we take those existing workloads and maybe instead of having, say, 5 data engineers keep them alive, keep it down to 1 or just outsource it outright and then redirect those same resources to invest in AI, which I think will require even more skill, more management, kind of training and this ability to guide them into different use cases that where the skill in order to pull it off in clinical or business or whatnot is just definitely going to be important. So in the past where we had traditional dashboarding and integration of data, in a sense, that's becoming a commodity as we shift our workforce to the new stuff in AI.
So certainly efficiencies in staffing and sort of in the administration of healthcare. Are we at the point with AI where cost savings from actual patient outcomes might feed back into support for increasing resources to acquire these technologies?
Yeah, so you're touching on value-based care and all the innovation that's been invested over decades in managed care and whatnot. That's definitely a possible source where from those savings, we can redirect that to new types of tools that we can purchase, new solutions that we can build with people and expand our use cases to patients that we typically would not. Maybe we can treat them in the home better. Maybe we can glean data from them that typically would not enter an EHR, not that they have an Apple Watch wearable or some other kind of device like that.
Furthermore, beyond just patient outcomes, but the economics of administering healthcare have been really unfavorable for a long time. I mean, you talk about the EHRs; those are effectively billing systems, right? I mean, they do a lot more, but at their core, they're fundamental mechanisms to get paid, and the back office operation to just get paid and exchange funds in healthcare is a ton. And I think what the advent of AI can power some real efficiencies there and reduce the burden associated to prior auths, to rev cycle, to care extenders and giving them efficiencies. And I do think that will be probably the first productivity wave that we'll see. And there's a lot of money there that can power additional investments.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of low-lying fruit in those back-end operations that are ridiculously tedious. Mm-hmm. And it's encouraging to see the progress that's come with the new LLMs in the last year. So definitely we can then release that workforce to now upskill and go take care of the new stuff.
Yeah.
So Nick, I'm sure you're seeing an incredible amount of innovation and experimentation with Gen AI and healthcare. I'd love both of your perspectives on this. As we have that kind of experimentation and maybe the democratization of applying these technologies, how do we then kind of make sure we're still staying integrated as a system? So that's a question for you as a vendor partner. And Albert, I think my question for you is, again, is this going to take a different approach in terms of an institution looking at their comprehensive data strategy? Are you going to be able to kind of put your arms around all of these, you know, experiments and use cases, or are you going to have to sort of just let them roll out as they do? So love to hear from you first.
Cat's out of the bag, and now you've got a bunch of people that have access to really, really powerful capabilities, and they might not necessarily have the training or the governance to stitch all that back together. I tend to skew towards, you know, more access is better and people will figure it out. We will create the right human systems and technical systems to stitch this together. But I think if you're going to pick somewhere on the spectrum, I think I tend towards one that accelerates innovation and puts this technology in hands as many hands as possible, because that's where you get the best ideas that really change the organization.
Yeah. That's a great point, Nick. For a person like me who's in an academic health system, I almost feel a responsibility to push innovation. So certainly we will have data governance. We'll be looking to make sure that when we apply AI, that it's done in a safe and responsible manner. But there are technology techniques, there are governance techniques that allow us to balance the risk with that opportunity to make those breakthroughs. And as long as we keep people informed, as we build up that base of data literacy to extend to AI, I think the investment is worth it.
And just sort of a wrap-up question for both of you. One of the old world problems in data, you know, used to be sort of accessing data from different sources, it not being a technology problem, it being a data access issue. So how are you, Albert, at UCLA thinking of ways to better and more easily unlock the data you need from these disparate sources? And is that affecting the strategy at Arcadia as well?
Yeah, in unlocking data, so there are many existing systems where, for the most part, I see us maybe gleaning only 10% of what's available for active analytics and even AI application. It's just very tedious to invest human time into unlocking the rest that's below, say, that waterline for that iceberg. But with the advent of AI, I think there's an opportunity to have that process automated to go ahead and see, are there nuggets of information that are worth pulling out? So that's for traditional data. Then there's for new kinds of data that we typically wouldn't think of. So for example, I can remember during the COVID times when things were starting to get a little better, when we had the vaccines, I remember taking a cruise. But unfortunately, I got COVID on that cruise. Now, I was far away from home. I recovered in no time. But none of that experience entered into the EHR. There's a lot that happens in our healthcare experience that's not formally recorded. And that will only come up, say, in a conversation with your physician or your entry into some other kind of tool. So we're looking for opportunities to see, can we stitch together that bigger patient story through other tools that pick up events like what I had gone through.
Mm-hmm. I think the anecdote, I'm sorry, by the way, that sounds like a crummy cruise, but I think it's germane to what we're seeing very structurally, which is a federation of sites of care to a really, really broad net. To your point, not everything is funneled through your primary hospital or your primary care's practice, whether it's at-home monitoring, wearables, your horrible cruise event. There's sort of a federation of this clinical data, and that just increases just broadens the payload that we all have to deal with. I think your title's the Chief Data Officer, right?
Chief Data Officer.
Like, I think that title is even interesting because everything's data. Like, there's not one operation within your organization that is not fundamentally powered by data and is not generating data that is of incredibly high value. So, like, from my perspective, your purview is, you know, all of UCLA, really. From a practical standpoint, the reason we've invested so much in our data lakehouse is for this exact reason, because data is proliferating and you need a high velocity, high scale way to harness that data. And treat that data with gradient of maturation and preparedness for use, but you need to be able to harness that data immediately with immense agility. And that's what these novel lakehouse technologies have enabled us to do.
Yeah. When I think of those partnerships with different organizations that we typically wouldn't work with, like you were alluding to that with this federation of data, this is where it's kind of incumbent on us to push what's possible. And that will spur government and regulation and standards for interoperability that may not be ready at this very moment. But when we can show it's possible, we can all move forward together.
It's really interesting to see the continuation of the journey we've been on and the ways in which we're upending it as well.
Yeah.
So thank you both for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Be sure to catch the companion HIMSS TV interview for more on building the infrastructure for data analytics. For HIMSS Cast, I'm Indu Subbiah.